Il-lura nasan rittajab li l-kom semija ta' Campus FM danwa Eman Borċ u program jor aħna għawne. Il-program ta' kulnar ta' ħamis fuq din il-frekwenza 103.7 FM fuq dan l-istazzjon Campus FM fejn flinkien ma' numru ta' esperti, professjonisti, attivisti u akademiċi nitkellmu dwar l-ugwaljanza f'Malta. Nitkellmu dwar il-realtà legali, dwar il-realtà soċjali u naraw kif dawn it-tnejn jaħdmu eat feet fil-ħajja tagħna ta' kuljum. Nifhmu, niddiskutu u nistaqsu verament x'inhi r-realtà li esperjenzaw numru ta' individwi fis-setturi kollha differenti tas-soċjetà Maltija. U jiena nirringrazzjakom kif ta' kull ġimgħa tkunu magħna hawnhekk fuq din il-frekwenza għal din id-diskussjoni tal-kummenti tagħkom fuq il-paġna tagħna tal-Facebook aħna hawn u hemmhekk intom ukoll tkomplu d-diskussjoni li nkunu bdejna hawnhekk fuq il-mejda ta' Campus FM u nkomplu wkoll lil mill-frekwenzi ta' dan l-istazzjon. Għalhekk grazzi tal-li għal din il-ġimgħa qed terġgħu tingħaqdu magħna. U kif wiegħdkom il-ġimgħa l-oħra wara diskussjoni interessanti ħafna li kellna ma' Dr. Diana Dibin, din il-ġimgħa għandna issa żewġ mistiedna diskussjoni differenti minn però hija diskussjoni li nixtieq mod personali li jkolli iktar u mhux biss din id-diskussjoni, però il-mertu ta' din id-diskussjoni fil-gżejjer Malti naħseb hija waħda importanti ħafna. Però biex nagħmlu dan ħan introduċi lil żewġ mistiedna tiegħi llum. U kif aħna wkoll nagħmlu ta' kull ġimgħa nibdew billi nintroduċi l-mistiedna tagħna u anke il-pronomi tagħna u il-pronomi tiegħi huwa Uwa bil-Malti hi him, and I would like now to introduce also our guest, Roxman and Charlie, who are here with us this afternoon. Firstly, thanks for being here, and I know that the exhibition is that we're going to talk about today is taking a lot of your time, so I appreciate also your commitment in here. Would you like to introduce yourselves and also so for the our listeners to also have a kind of a voice to what they're going to hear today?
Hello, I'm Roxman Gatt. I'm a Maltese multidisciplinary artist. I've been based in London for nearly 11 years. Since September, I found myself back in Malta.
Welcome.
So as I have been here, I've been working mainly on three projects. I had a solo show called Mama's Boy.
Okay.
Rosa Queer, this project that me and Charles have been working on for the last year. And as well as my transition.
All right.
And my pronouns are he and him.
Perfect. Thank you.
I'm Charlie Kauke, and I'm also a multidisciplinary artist, and I also a filmmaker. I make my own work, so a lot of it focuses on, very different things, but the work I've made so far has looked at migration, and at the moment I'm making a documentary about Maltese in Soho. But besides making my own work, I also work with other artists, so this is an example of that. So I'm working with Roxman on this project. We've been working on it for a year, and so for this project, my capacity is as a kind of collaborator and producer of sorts. So I go by the pronouns she and her.
Perfect. Thank you so much for that. I have a side question. When we say multidisciplinary, what do we mean by that also for the benefit of our audience?
So basically, I make use of more than one medium, because I feel in order to express specific kind of emotions, like we do it differently, right? So for me, like, depending on what I want to communicate or express, I have to do it with, I can't just do it with painting, for instance.
Yeah.
So, and I use performance, sound, sculpture, painting, a lot of text. So
there's quite, like as you said, it's an amalgamation of these, medium, as you say. And that is also what Rosa Queer is. I still need to, but from what I saw, of course, we will talk also a little bit about this. But as a pretext, you mentioned the painting, so as starting to paint the canvas for this conversation, If I had to ask, and I ask this to all of our guests, like, what does equality mean to you? Because that is the core, the essence, the structure of this program, talking about equality and what it really means, not just like the legal pretext of that. So, yeah.
Okay. So I guess the concept of human rights maybe is that all people, no matter of how different we are, have equal rights, meaning that our rights are the same. And maybe equality then for me would mean that when human rights will truly and genuinely become universal, and there's no longer specific groups of people suffering from violence and discrimination. Also, LGBT issues and feminism, I don't think they should be separate and they should go hand in hand. Because in a sense, homophobia and transphobia might stem from inequality between men and women as well. And often within the context of Malta, I guess we rank for number one in terms of LGBT rights, but which is amazing. But then I feel we might be failing our women when it's stripping them of some of their basic human rights when it comes to complete abortion ban. Also, I've seen that we've created a hostile environment for our siblings, like fleeing their own country because of difficult and life-threatening situations. So equality maybe is when it's no longer us and them as well.
Yeah. It's very curious that you mention women's rights and migration, which were actually the two conversations we had in the past 2 weeks. So I do invite also our audience to go, if they want to go, we delved with Dr. Adriana Dibin and UNHCR on migration and refugee and the asylum seeking process. So I really appreciate you saying, listen, at the end of the day, especially the LGBTI and the feminism, I truly believe that a lot of the homophobia and transphobia is gender-based. And it took me a while to learn. It took me a while to understand that because we're so indoctrinated with the bubbles, with the boxes that just say, so this is the LGBT, but what does that mean truly, you know? So it's a learning curve, you know? Yeah, yeah.
I think that's a really good point, actually, this idea of bubbles. And you say, well, it's like to separate all these issues, but it's all one issue.
It is. It is. What does that tell you, like Charlie? Also, like the meaning of equality for you? Would you add anything? Because that's a very good definition.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I can really add anything. I think Roxman just hit the nail on the head there with that. But also just about being heard. That's all. Yeah. Just listening. I think we forget to listen to each other, and that's so important.
I really like the listening thing because most of us don't realize, like, we're all in this together as well, and what might affect you or not affect, you know?
Yeah.
So I think the solidarity between each and every one of us, understanding each, like, that everyone has different needs, but also that, like, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're all and I think that's another thing that, and I'm maybe talking about here specifically because we are here, but you know, we're all fighting for different things, but sometimes, actually, if we just stop, we'll realize we're trying to fight for the same thing.
Yeah, and we're battling, like, very interconnected issues, all at once, in a sense.
When we say also, because I'm, when you say listening, I think also maybe we should introduce now the Rosa Queer, right? And the exhibition that is happening. Is art... before we introduce it, I have to ask this question. Is art a means of listening? Is art, and what does that mean? When we say listening, does it mean, because when we say listening, the audience is listening to us by sound, but does listening only mean the sound? Is there more to it in terms of arts and how one expresses himself?
Maybe being sensitive to what others are saying. Especially if you don't come from the same background, you don't come from the same experiences.
And what is Rosa Queer? Let's so for whoever haven't heard about this, what are we talking about here?
Rosa Queer, should we just introduce it
yeah.
from what inspired the name?
Yes.
And
yeah, let's go with that. Let's go with that.
You
yeah.
talk
I
about
think you should start.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a little story.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little story from
story time.
So
we'll do some audio after this.
The title of the project is inspired by story dating back to 1774.
Okay.
When Rosa Mifsud, a 17-year-old intersex person from Lua, petitioned for sex change, for a change in sex from female to male.
All right.
And then two physicians were appointed by the court to perform this examination, where they later concluded that the male sex was the dominant one.
All right.
And then the grandmaster himself took the final decision and told Mifsud, like, from now on you wear male clothing. That's it.
All right. How did you find this?
It was just a week, like, on the LGBTQ Malta, like, intersex.
Oh, is it the list?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There's, like, a couple of, like, there's some history covered.
All right.
Which we're lacking, like, our timeline is, there's huge gaps in our timeline. We've, you know, so, but this was part, one story I found from 1774, which I found really interesting. And so that's why there's no name of, like, when they've changed and they've become,
I see.
There's no, their name is not there, like, if they've ever changed their name or they remained Rosa. So we kept Rosa, and then the queer is written Kwe.
What? Yeah, that's, I like that.
The way, for me, it's like, all right, queer in Maltese, k. So.
Yeah. So it's Maltese, queer.
No,
yeah,
it's, no, well, there's, it's also.
We can make it.
It also means twerk or something.
Oh, okay, yeah.
From, and then, yeah. I've had some research around the word as well.
Okay.
It's coming from other language, but I can't speak about it now because my facts are not.
It's an interesting, definitely, I think it's presenting something different. So I think that's the starting point here, right? That there's something different. So for me, it's a fresh over. It's a lifeline for water, honestly. So in 1774, Rosa Queer started an intersex person in Malta. Interestingly enough, there is a gap in timeline we mentioned.
We have the document. We found the medical. There's only like a medical document, you know, which we found online as well.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the archive, it's not. I don't think it should be pushed as, you know, this is not a place where you can come and find out about LGBTQI plus history. It's what we're trying to make. We're trying to find that as we go along. So Rox has been, you know, working on this project for a year, and as he said, there are so many gaps in the timeline, so trying to piece it together has been really interesting,
especially on what we are focusing on, which is even more of a like smaller group of
which
people, because it's a response to the lack of representation, mainly of trans men, non-binary, lesbian, by queer, intersex, masculine presenting people, which makes it more difficult to find research. And often I have done research on trans histories, lesbian histories, but through a foreign lens. You know, so this is research, and you find American trans men, British trans men, like even in reading books about masculine presenting people in Africa and like, or, like, you know, so there's so much research there, but I've never come across really trans men, butch, lesbian, dykes, Maltese, who are Maltese in books, you know. So I wish to show that these people exist, and we're writing our own history through our own, you know, through our own words, which is really important, like, read from all the myths that there are about us as well, often found in media, you know. So I think, that's the main thing that inspired.
This gives me also, I remember there was, like, history is written by those who won. You know, sometimes there's so, And I thank you also, like both of you, for teaching us, because as LGBT activists, you know, sometimes we're, again, debubbled, you know, we're so much focused on what we need to, like, to achieve, rightly so sometimes, you know, because you have to be assertive also, that there is then the listening part. And I'm someone who, well, I'm a radio host. I do a lot of the talking. So sometimes learning to listen is a very good, it's a very good thing. How was the creative process to start with? Because that's an interesting thing to also discuss. Yeah.
Well, I just want to jump in a moment, and in terms of listening and histories and underrepresentation. So I am a cisgender female. I am not in any way, I cannot claim to have the same background as Roxman and experiences as Roxman. And I think that's important because I learn from Roxman, and I really think it really is important to show these histories and these narratives and to have this representation. And part of the process of this was a collaboration that stems from, you know, Rox meeting me and saying, look, there's this gap. I'm not seeing any representation of all the things he's just mentioned. How can we go about readdressing this and finding new ways to talk about this?
And also from a more artistic perspective.
Yeah.
And a more celebratory perspective, you know. That was the main thing for us. I said I want to be playful for all these people to come within a space that is like within also contemporary art, which, you know, this is also important for us because there is contemporary art, it's becoming better, but there's still a lack of what we could see here in Malta. It's not like you always can go to different exhibitions and per se, but also queer contemporary art made for, like, by queer artists.
Yeah.
And this was something that we thought was important to tackle, and also bringing all these people, you know, from the art world, and then, but also people who are from different walks of life, put in the same space, and it's all about them,
yeah.
Which I think was beautiful, like, for the opening of the exhibition, mm-hmm. That was a huge thing. And that is how art, you know, for me, like, art is a tool. It's a really powerful weapon, even, you know, like, how it could bridge, you know, like, through softness somehow, playfulness, could really deal with such sensitive, difficult topics.
Now I'm very excited to finish.
In general, not yeah, exactly.
No.
But this was...
If I may, just because I'm learning now, when also we're saying, you know, playfulness, softness, like, is it something which... I mean, of course, we're lacking it. Well, clearly we're lacking it here in Malta. Is it only a Maltese thing, or is it, because I'm very much aware that, you know, the contemporary art, this is what I mean. Like, is it, so firstly, what's contemporary art? Let's start from there, just for my sake. And I know it seems to be a very loaded question, but what would that be also for our audience, just to introduce that? And then I'll also feed into it also the creative process. How did you start the coming up with all the items that are being exhibited? So Rox, because you mentioned the word contemporary art,
but going into the definition of contemporary art, I'm not sure, but for me it's like, you know, in Malta there's a lot of classical art, then there's a lot of modern art.
Okay,
sometimes
there you go.
I'm not saying there are galleries who are showing just contemporary art, you know, like Blitz and like
Ots and Valletta Contemporary.
Valletta Contemporary, so.
Yeah, Mikas.
No, you know, like there are things happening, and even pop, like small space, non spaces that
there
artists.
There are lots of people making their own work and using their own, and, you know, finding their own venues and really making things. In a very DIY sense, and it's really exciting to see there are lots of curators
away
as well
from
working away from the institution.
I see. Yeah. The creative. I'm very curious about the creative process. Like, How do you sit down and start?
This was really, like, I rarely have, I've never done a project like this before. And I it was always at the back of my mind, and I just felt it, I was never ready to do it. Yep. And then, like a year and a half ago, I messaged Charlie. I told her I have this really rough proposal. I sent it to her, and then she told me she got really excited to do the project. And she made magic. We applied for some funding. We got it, and after that day, we've just closely been working together. Charlie has had more experience with working on documentation and working with people,
okay,
which I've never done before, because I make my own art, you know, art, you know, it's more personal. It's like it's in a group show or in a solo show, and it's never working closely with people. So Charlie helped me throughout discovering ways that fit me, I guess, that would still make sense to my practice,
yep,
but working now with my own, the community, you know, and I wish you could speak.
I mean, like Rocks, I make my own work, and my work is very research-based, as, you know, my past life in academia, I suppose, has influenced that. But I never wanted to come in on this project and impose my own ways of doing things. Rather, I would look at how Rocks works and advise, or we would come up with ways together and how to go forward. But as he said, I have a lot more, a lot of my practice deals with working with people, not necessarily in the community, but so for example, I worked on a 3-year project for Valletta 2018, which was called Latitude 36, and it had multiple components. But at the core, it looked at Maltese people who had left Malta.
Oh, okay.
So I traveled to the States. I did some research in London and in Tunisia, and it was a very multidisciplinary project, but it had people at its core. I've also worked with other artists whose practice is also very community-based and research-led. So, for instance, Lois Weaver, who's a Guggenheim Fellow, and she is a professor at Queen Mary University of London, where I used to study.
Oh.
She had a project which was supported by the Wellcome Collection and lots of other entities, and it was called What Tammy Needs to Know About Getting Old and Having Sex. And her practice was, well, she'd perform with an alter ego called Tammy Why Not, and she would go to old people's homes and she would talk to the elderly about, you know, what it is to get old and to still be maybe sexually active or not, or, you know, all of these issues. And I learned a lot from her in ways of audience participation and taking all of that research and creating a work. So I think all of those things combined helped me to help Rocks create this wonderful piece of work. And Rock said, well, I created magic. I really didn't. And you can't make something when the ingredients aren't good, and the ingredients were all there. So I'm glad we've managed to now, I think, create not something that is going to be one-off. So this is the start. So Rosa Queer is the start of this. And I'm hoping that it's something that we can keep building and building on in terms of the research of the archive, but also Rox's output from an artistic standpoint.
Yeah, and we've started with 25 participants, which is quite a nice number, taking into consideration that we were doing it during COVID. And the artistic process that you're asking about, I think it's there was a structure. Both me and Charlie worked really beautifully together, like very in sync. There was a lot of listening, I guess, which usually I find myself not doing when it's like within the practice, when I'm like doing my own project, it's just me. But at this time, we both really believed in each other's processes. None of us felt alone ever doing it. And the way we started, so, because it's quite a sensitive, you know, it's quite sensitive. You're making people to, whether anonymous or not, putting themselves out there, sharing their stories? Are they coming from kind of marginalized or minority, you know? But I felt already like quite comfortable and confident in doing so because I am a trans man myself. So there was this one thing already to start us off with the people I'm meeting, which was in common, which is a huge thing when you think about it, even if we're coming from completely different backgrounds, you know. So there was that. And then I met, so I used to, I contacted MGRM. At the time there was Alex.
Yeah.
We became really good friends and he started telling me, I'll contact this, I'll add you to this group, yeah. Facebook group. Blah. We got out an open call. And it was not so successful because, you know, people weren't reaching out. So then I thought, all right, we need to go through another way. So I started looking for people, making friends on them on Facebook, writing them a general idea of what the project is. And then if they reply and asking me more questions, I would explain more, send them the open call, send them an email to describe fully the project. Then I'd ask them whether they'd want to meet again. So we'd meet, have whether it's video call or for a coffee, and then, you know, to warm up so that it's more intimate. I needed that. I need them to see me talk with my eyes, you know, like I think that shows the honesty and the passion that's and making someone feel safe, you know, that they're going to be working with me. After that, I'd suggest for them to take a photo, do a photo shoot if they only want to. And I used to ask for them to choose the place, a place where they feel it's home or and comfortable and safe. Some chose the bedroom, others chose near the sea, others, you know, it was different for everyone. So we have all these photo shoots for those most people who wanted to do it. Then we'd have an email exchange, and through our conversations and a big part of this project is questioning and finding so asking what is masculinity and looking into alternative notions of masculinity away from the more traditional idea of masculinity, which is often connected to toxic masculinity. So we're trying to find you know, new forms of masculinities, and this was a conversation we were asking and having. So we have email exchanges, and then I was asking them also to donate objects for our archive to have, and telling me stories about why that object is important. So we have that too. So this was the process.
And also the digital side of it is quite important now, especially with COVID, because we weren't sure whether or not we would be able to exhibit in the beginning. So we always knew that there was always going to be an online platform anyway, because also that is great to reach other audiences that might either not be here or might not be able to come and see the space or come to the exhibition. So it was always going to live online, but I think it became even more important. And as Rock said, maybe if this had been done pre-pandemic, you would have gone out into the community more and found people that way. But it was mostly done online in the beginning because we weren't able to.
And online, is it, correct me if I'm wrong, is it difficult to express yourself online?
I can't really. I mean, Rock's work is more digital than mine, I guess. So I don't know if you want to answer that.
Well,
in general, it's not. I mean, for me, it's just like, is it difficult maybe to see a paint of art online? Maybe it's different, or like an exhibition online. Although nowadays
so the website isn't just there to function sometimes, you know, it's a work of art in its own self, and there are people using online. Like being online, there are many internet artists and digital artists, you know, so.
But I think the importance of this in particular is that it's not just a piece of work of work. What's also really interesting is, and so I don't come, so my research is completely different to Rock's. When I studied, it was, I studied film. A lot of my research was based around film here specifically, but I've also researched lots of other different things. And so my, I've learned a lot from Rock's in terms of, you know, LGBTQI plus history through a lot of the reading material. And what is brilliant, I think, and that I'm really happy that you came up with this idea, was that all of the text, all of the literature that informs his work, you can read. So there's a Google Drive that you can access, and any time Rox finds a, you know, some literature that he thinks is important, it's always put in that folder. So So sometimes even I go and reference it. I'm like, oh, wow, that's very,
yeah. It's just we're building it up because I've just introduced this Google Doc now, because within our physical exhibition, you see snippets of these papers, articles, magazines. You know, you have metamorphoses like an F2M, female to male newsletter from the you know, 80s or 90s. Mm. So you have like these pieces of this information and pieces of research within our show. But then if you're interested, you could just go to the Google Drive and it's likely you'll find these there. And if you're even more interested, there are ways to find. So, you know, there's the...
That's brilliant.
So we're collecting. There's so much more research, yes, you know, which I haven't put in there. But we've just started building it up, and people who would wish and tell me, hey, I've got this paper, could you include it? Yeah. Like, I'll include it there. And I've even put folders where we have local research. So if someone's written a paper on gender and sexuality or whatever, we could include it. Most part, even better if it's aligned with what we're researching here specifically, which masculine obscenity, you know, research, like female masculinities and stuff like that. So, because most of the research is around this. And so the website is very important. It's the main, it's as big as the physical exhibition, you know, because it's the online, it's an online archive. It's going to continue growing. We want people to come and contact me, tell me, hey, I want to be part of this project. So we start the whole process again. Maybe there will be a second publication, you know.
So maybe that is a good point actually to bring in, is not just the digital and not just the gallery space, but there's also a publication.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Yeah.
That accompanies everything. So, and again, that also came out of COVID, because we had to think. Oh. I mean, that was always the idea to have a publication, but it was, you know, we were funded by the Arts Council, which was amazing, and for them to see potential in this project. And then, so when we put together our application, it was a very unknown, you know, whether or not we would be able to do this all as a, you know, one gallery exhibition, or, you know, so we had to come up with ways of getting the work out there. And Rox was kind of adamant on a publication, and I'm really glad that he decided to like really push for that.
And it became quite central to the whole work somehow.
So this pub, it includes elements from the exhibition.
Totally. They're all so, you know.
And also your research practice. So all of those, the communication that Rox was talking about, so the emails, you know, asking participants, what does masculinity mean to you? A lot of those are published as they were sent.
Yeah.
They're screenshots, and we haven't adjusted the language, or, you know, even if there are typos, we've left them because that was the way that the exchange occurred. So so if you do want to know about the research practice or the way this came about, you can just
literally
look at the book.
Yeah,
and it's just quotes and snippets, but then you go online and you could read the whole email exchange, you know? So you see elements in everywhere, like you could get a gist of what this project is through the exhibition, through the publication, through the online.
That's breaking barriers, like, because I'm so used for an exhibition, you go, you tour an hour or two, and then you leave, and then that's it, you know? But this is whole, I'm enjoying, like, I'm like, this is how it should, honestly, and I'm very native when it comes to art, but this is how it should, because if I'm interested, I can just go and do my own research, which is presented to me in whatever, in any aspect that I like, you know. I'm sure there's different stories. There's 25 individuals, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot of stories there. Like, that's a lot of, and different stories, right? Like, there's a...
Totally. And it's really nice because we've got people from 16 to 62. It was for us both, mm-hmm. It was super important, but we were struggling. We were thinking, are we going to find, like, you know, it was easier to find kids, especially if I'm discovering these people online, which often they're more used to, you know, it's the younger generation that's using Facebook all the time. Not that the older generation isn't, you know, I'm not generalizing at all. But it was easier and they were more like, I want to be in it, you know. And then...
But once you found, you know, once word got out and there was a lot of trust, then that became a lot easier for you.
Yeah, and as I say, meeting people changes, because sometimes from an online conversation, you would say, all right, I'm interested, I'll meet you, but no pictures. Then I meet them, and we got on so well, through you know, our conversation, they truly believe in it, and they feel, I even want to be part of the photo shoot. I want to do it. That's why beautiful. Not, you know? So there were these really beautiful exchanges.
Yeah, and individuals from different backgrounds, and I was seeing the list, and there's quite a number of people that I personally know, but there's other individuals that I never, and I think that's the beautiful of it, that through this medium, and I'm going to experience a different side of, firstly, but personally, one of the participants is one of my closest friends. But now I'm very curious to see a different side of the conversation, which maybe I never had with Reb, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, Reb, I will say something, you know, but it's honestly. Since I haven't got, what should I expect when I arrive? Like, what's the whole, yeah? Because now I'm curious. Now I'm just like, I really wish I could go a little bit sooner than I will, actually.
It's something really intimate. I think that's special. Also, the gallery itself is almost like a home. So it's got a real sense of, I don't know, it's comforting, I think.
Yeah, and I guess the opening was even more special in a sense that all those who could come, and I really insisted, I really pleaded for all the participants to come on that specific day so that they could meet each other, you know, and because I think that was...
How was the opening? Like, what was the agenda on the opening?
It was beautiful just seeing these people, like the participants go in there, seeing themselves hung on walls, hearing themselves if they've contributed, like, you know, a video work or whatever, and just being around other people, like maybe who they didn't know, and now they know, there's other people from my community.
Yeah.
It's always nice to be within your community, you know, like...
That's true.
I really enjoy it. I have people from everywhere. It's not, I don't just hang out with trans men, but when there are many of us, it's really wonderful. So,
I think it's also, it's very curious how in Malta we're first legally, like, on the rainbow map, but then there's very limited, say, like virtually none of queer spaces. And I know, like, people tell me, but why do you need queer spaces? Yeah, we need queer spaces. You know, we need that safe space. And I say we, I mean, I have a lot of privileges, you know, and I say that and I account to that, but that doesn't mean that I personally should not be part of the quote-unquote fight for these spaces.
Yeah, I'm in the same camp there because, you know, I'm very privileged and this project really has... shown me how, like, there's a lot of people battling for just the most basic things.
Yeah, and same here. I'm super privileged to be able to do this project, being around my community where I actually get to realize how privileged I am in comparison to other people who are have to go through the same experiences, you know. So, but creating a space like this, I guess, when people can come in, now there are books as well. I put my books in there so people could come in and just stay there, read whenever they want. It's open by appointment because I can't always be there. Yeah. But anytime anyone wants to just message me, I'll do like a tour, you know, explain.
You've also had tours of the film. Kids, no, from schools.
That, yeah, yeah, and because I truly believe in education, like we have to start from young, and I want schools to visit shows like this. You know, one, you start kids from a young age, seeing contemporary art. Well, this there is, you know, whether it's contemporary art or not. In my previous show, that was what they were seeing, but also there was a lot of trans discourse within the show. So, and learning about different people, and that we exist. We've always been here, even.
It's also just nice to have another art space.
Yeah,
I mean, there's enough. It's just nice to have another.
Hopefully,
space
this space is just going to be dedicated to that. It's always going to show queer art and contemporary art. Hopefully.
Hopefully, okay. That's the idea. Okay. And where is it? Where is the?
It's in Main Street, Balsam.
Okay. We'll share the link on Facebook group as well of the Facebook event that there is on our page. But just as an idea, you know, and regarding the kids, how was the reception? Like, what was the, from a kid's perspective? It's interesting. When I was a kid, no idea that this, like, you know.
Well, a friend of mine came to the opening with his two children.
Okay.
One's 10, I think, and the other one's 13. And I asked him afterwards, like, oh, you know, what did they think? And he just said, well, the eldest one, who's 13, said she loved it, but she was very nonplussed about like what you're talking about, because she has people in her class who consider themselves to be
elderly. Okay,
like, that's amazing. that's great. So she just came in to enjoy it really as the art, not just like, oh, I have to, you know, just learn every, you know, that's already being taught, so that's really positive, I suppose.
From my previous show, I can speak mostly from that, because actually there were school visits, so there were age groups from around 10 years to 16 and 18. And for me, it was very special because I was not scared, which is horrible when I think about it. Because we're taught to be scared to talk about these issues with kids, when it's like, this is like instilled inside me. It's something quite, you know, it's internalized transphobia if I'm scared to talk about. So I had that for a long time. I was thinking about it. But when the kids came, I was just talking about them, about all the transgender issues, non-binary people. It was looking into butterflies a lot because it's the symbol of transgender people, but also and the younger kids, for me, it was firstly, not many kids go to see exhibitions where there's sound, performance, sculptures, and then painting, stuff written, you know. They're not used to this kind of artwork within one space. So that was quite amazing for them, or like strange or different or exciting.
Yeah.
And then the teachers gave them some workshops.
Okay.
Whilst they were in the space. And they were all right. The way that they received the work of the show was so beautiful. A lot of kindness and love and empathy came through, which for me it was like, wow. It was one of the most positive works I've done as well, and in comparison to my other works. And they were just drawing these butterflies, like non-binary chimeras, and telling me we are all different, but we all fly. So,
that's so beautiful.
It was amazing. And I've never considered or even thought of, I was never really bothered much before in my work, like to invite kids. It wasn't something I was considering, but now that I'm in Malta, and I think being able to be so open about who I am, and even more so celebrating it and wanting everyone to realize how precious these people are, we are, I think I started realizing how important it is to start from at a young age in schools. All schools should take people, their kids, you know, like bring your parents, you know. Sometimes it's more difficult with parents than it is with kids because they're so innocent that, you know.
Yeah.
So I think...
I'm curious what my parents were thinking.
I'm curious what my parents
were thinking. It's a lot. It's a lot to unpack there. But then, no, definitely, I think, because we're like, whoa, the time is flying. But, you know what? I mean, we already mentioned it, like, briefly, like, that this is like the start. But this is going to be exhibited until December 30th, right? Or am I incorrect on
no,
that?
No, it's correct somehow, but longer. It will be...
Well, that, yeah, so...
Well, it's a question.
Into the next year, for sure.
Okay.
As Rock said, at the moment, because we're operating on such a low capacity,
yeah,
it's only open by appointment.
Okay.
But that hopefully might change. We're still trying to find our feet and trying to raise more money to keep this archive going and to keep the work going. So that's where we're at the moment. But it is only just the beginning, so... also, for those who cannot visit the gallery, everything is online. It's not the same experience, obviously, but everything is online. So,
Totally, and it's rosaqueer.com.
Yeah, that's a good.
I was okay. There is a dash.
There is a Facebook group. Our Instagram is up. It's Rosa Queer. It started off being like showing just research that I do, and now eventually we're introducing the participants, snippets from the publication, from the website. So it's like it is an educational extension as well of all of this project. And if you go through the first post up to the last, you know, you see stories on trans men, butches, dykes from America, from, you know, you get to learn about our community from a foreign.
Rox has taught me a lot, I think.
So it's really interesting. So there's, you could get to know so much about this project on Instagram, on Facebook. Now we have everything up.
I think the, well, it's artivism, right? It's this is activism as well, you know? In essence, it's also...
It is. I feel I'm a political body, you know, I can't not make work that's not political, and I think it's...
Well, I mean, we need more of it. You know, like, I think we're deprived of
but
that.
But also through my own stories, you know, I'm not imposing anything on anyone, which is for me very important.
I think what's important to mention is Rox is also one of the participants in this book. So
and Charlie got to shoot me. I mean, take photographs. Not shoot.
Good to clarify.
That was a thing that I really stressed was, Rox, if you are going to make this and you are looking at you are part of that community, you must put yourself in this. So you did not shy away from that, and you are part of this too.
So I think it's also beautiful to see that dynamic, you know, like presenting yourself out there and just taking the leap of faith, because it is a leap of faith. Let's not underestimate also the audience that is listening to us, that it is breaking barriers, especially when it comes. And I again, because it was such the fact that there's queer art. And I had a conversation with Dali a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about how you know, even in art itself, there's some censoring of LGBTI characters, you know, individuals. And I remember he told me, you know, you always wonder why women were being presented like naked. But then suddenly there was a change in history where everyone started being clothed. I was like, oh, yes, that's true. And then I was like, there's so much I need to learn about this. So this is why I'm very grateful for you both to show us your work. I don't know, what's next in your art life, you know, what's then apart from this, is there something else we should know about, or is that a question mark and we're or a secret and we should have a conversation about what's next in future programs? If there's any projects, definitely we'll talk about them in future projects. Well, you know, what's happening? Just to conclude, you know, remarks.
Yeah. So I'm working on an ongoing, this Soho project, which has been going for ages. It kind of stopped because of COVID, but is continuing. So that's one thing. And then I have another two projects that I don't really want to that are kind of being fleshed out. Then I'm not sure if this is okay. I have an ongoing project with Rocks, which is documenting Rocks'
journey.
Rocks is transitioning journey.
Yeah.
Which I'm really, really humbled to be allowed to do and grateful for, and it's a really beautiful experience, and that's another project. And then together trying to, you know, make Rosa Queer stay alive and active, and I'm sure they will.
Yeah, and hopefully bring a really nice program for people to see art, both locally, but also bringing artists from abroad, hopefully. This is what I really am dreaming of as my next project.
I think you're talking, honestly, this, from what I learned is these like 50 minutes, there's a lot, and especially in 1 year, there's a lot that happened in 1 year, like, whoa. Okay. Thank you so much. I honestly appreciate you being here. It's rosa-queer or Rosa Queer? Just because there's a dash, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So rosa-queer.com. We're going to listen to some Maltese music, actually Gozeti music. It's Mike Majo, Jolene San, and Shona Xisa Place, and we'll conclude this program.
To a place with no destination.
Mużika minn Malta, Mickey Maggio, Jolene Saman u Sean Aksisa Place, iktar mużika minn Malta minn hawn ftit minuti oħra ma' Tony Sant. Dak kien il-programm aħna hawn miegħi Eman Borċ għallum edizzjoni oħra ukoll għaddiet kien hemm Rox u l-Charlie fejn flimkien qegħdin jesibu esibizzjoni ġewwa ħalbalzan bl-isem ta' Rosa Queer, esibizzjoni differenti b'numru ta' partiċipanti. U arti differenti fil-gżira Maltija għanna iktar bżonn arti dik żgura għalhekk nieħu gost li attivisti żgħażagħ qegħdin ukoll jipparteċipaw f'dan l-ambitu. Dal-programm ikun repetut nhar is-Sibt fil-11, programm ieħor bħal dan nhar il-Ħamis fl-istess ħin dejjem fuq Campus FM. Eman Borċ isemmilkom u jixtieqilkom il-miliet it-tajjeb. Tislijiet.